This is a very special edition of Live and Local. I'm your host, Mike Hogan. Thank you so much for joining me today. My guest today is Dr. Cheryl Logan, who began her position as superintendent of Omaha Public Schools on July 1st of 2018. And in a little over two short years, is steering this 52,000 student district through the worst nationwide health crisis in over 100 years. Socially distanced from me, 12 feet away, both of us with masks. I welcome Dr. Logan to the show, and congratulations on your two-year work anniversary.
Thank you, Mike.
Monday night was the first in-person school board meeting in months. And there were some very strong opinions, very strong emotions at the meeting attended by parents. And in fact, two people actually had to be removed because of their behavior from the meeting. Have you ever been a part of such an emotionally charged school board meeting?
You know, Mike, unfortunately, I actually have. And many of you know that I worked in Philadelphia for 5 years, and it was a very familiar. Monday night was very familiar to me, but it's important that we have civic engagement. It's important that people can come to meetings and have their viewpoints heard. And it's also important for us to treat each other as nicely as we can. And so I feel that we'll get there. You know, sometimes it takes time. It is a very emotionally charged time. Generally, we have been for several months in a new normal that doesn't feel normal at all. And I think that, you know, with time and with grace, we will get there. And in the meantime, we need to have decorum. We need to protect each other, and we'll go from there.
A lot of parents have thoughts about some of the issues, and some of the three main issues that were discussed on Monday night, whether the school should reopen, to what extent it should reopen, and that masks are going to be required to be worn by every student and every staff member. In fact, at that meeting, everyone in attendance was required to wear a mask. That's just part of the policy that is here. Would you mind explaining for those that may not have heard from you or from the school about it, why is OPS requiring masks across the board?
The main reason that we are requiring masks is that, and we try to call them facial coverings, there's something about the word mask that is off-putting to many people, and I think facial covering does sound a little more gentle. One of the things that's the most important for us in opening schools is not just getting them reopened in terms of our brick-and-mortar schools, because we actually never closed. We just went to a virtual format, is that we not just open, but we stay open. And we have many staff, many, many students who would not be able to attend if we don't use all of the things that are in our toolkit to make it as safe as we possibly can for them to return. And so really, that's what the facial coverings are all about. It's as Dr. Poor says, she certainly is one of my favorite people here in town, and she's such a brilliant, brilliant scientist. Is that, you know, it's a Swiss cheese approach, right? So we need to do three things until we have a pharmaceutical intervention of some sort, either a medication or a vaccine. We need to do three things. We need to cover our faces and our mouth and nose, because that helps us. My facial covering protects you, and your facial covering protects me. We also need to wash our hands vigorously, young people and old people, wash our hands vigorously as often as possible, or use hand sanitizer when it's not possible, and we need to socially distance. And those are things in our approach that we need to do so that we have as many people feel as comfortable as possible with returning to in-person learning.
Sure. And we're already seeing a rebound in other states, California, Texas, Florida. The rebounding is getting a little scary for some folks that may not have chosen to use those precautions. There are also schools across the country that are not reopening at this juncture. Omaha Public Schools, and as you said, I should rephrase that, re-engaging in in-person classes, mm-hmm. because as you said, we've been open this whole time. There's been virtual learning going on this whole time. But to re-engage in physically present classes, why has Omaha Public Schools chosen to do this?
Well, we know that the best way to learn is, for most of us, is to be in person, and especially for our little ones. And when we started to plan the coming back to the physical buildings, we first looked at 100%, And we looked at what that would mean based on the recommendations that we have from health officials and the utilization of our schools. And that is, you know, the easiest way to say that is how crowded or not crowded they are. And once we started looking at all of those things, we realized that it was going to be irresponsible for us to return to 100% based on what we are currently facing. And that's how we got to the Family 3-2 plan. We also wanted to consider keeping families together and the impact on families, which we know is great. It was great in March, and it will continue, I think, to be in some form until we have some sort of intervention that makes it so that we can be closer together like we were once were.
Sure. Everyone's familiar with the police-related incidents that have fueled protests, and unfortunately, in some cases, riots. And there's a difference. Mm-hmm. Protests are a fine American tradition. Riots are not. That said, does the role of the school resource officer change here in Omaha Public Schools? There's calls to remove school resource officers, and how is that going to be dealt with moving forward?
There is intense interest in the school resource officer. I'm old enough now to have been an administrator before there were school resource officers, and now with school resource officers. And I was a high school principal, had a school resource officer. And this is an item that will be up for public debate. I am the daughter of a police officer. That's not a secret as well. And I feel like, you know, we can have safety and support. And this is for me speaking personally. It's a policy decision by our Board of Education. And I think that the first thing is to understand how young people are experiencing school resource officers in their schools. And that is a starting point. And I feel like we started there with, you know, students relaying their concerns, and the conversation continues with our young people and with their parents about the role and the necessity or not of having school resource officers in schools. One of the things I can say is that, you know, because I was in a school administrator before there were school resource officers, is that the police are always in. The police come to schools whether or not we had, before there were school resource officers, we still had police in schools. They were called in when there was an issue or some sort of investigation, or sometimes they came in because of community investigations. And we value our relationship with the school resource officers that are in our schools right now. I've actually talked with our chief, Todd Schmatter, about it, and he sent me some data about it. And I think we have an opportunity to have dialogue, because that's how you start anything. A protest is really a dialogue that maybe happens in public. And that is a wonderful way for our students to engage and for our community to decide what they would like to have. I think this is really a community decision, and obviously a decision that's left up to our Board of Education about the role and the actual placement of school resource officers in our schools.
You just mentioned dialogue, and I was actually going to go back to something you said as mm-hmm. we started this interview, that in having that dialogue, there's got to be some grace. There's got to be a mutual respect so that really one we can come to a solution that is the best for the kids as an overall. Not 100% of the people will ever be happy ever, and that's never happened in the history of the planet. But that said, one of the calls to action that was brought up the other night was a call for more transparency for Omaha Public Schools. And I've interviewed you a handful of times here, and when we talked about the strategic plan of action, the five-year plan, which has metrics and numbers that tell us whether we're failing or succeeding. You brought this out a long time before. The opening of this school with the staggered, the Monday, Tuesday, mm-hmm. Thursday, Friday with the swing day on Wednesdays, you brought that up with me in May. Mm-hmm. What on earth are you being accused of hiding? Because I don't really understand what we're missing here.
You know, transparency is in the eye of the beholder, and I am aware of that. And so we have to, you know, sometimes when you face a criticism, or I like to say, you know, when people identify an area for an upgrade, you know, it's important to not dismiss, right? And to think about what it is that people want. I also, you know, I've shared with you before, Mike, that when we are approaching something, we always go say, what is the problem we're trying to solve? And I think that that is what we have to do, right? And I think in life, there are just not really many things where there are a binary option. The only thing I can think about is ice cream. I'm either going to have some or I'm not. But, you know, I think that, and I don't mean to be glib about, you know, this, because this is a serious issue for folks. And I understand why. And I don't feel in this case of the school resource officers that families and children should feel they need to choose between safety and support. We should be able to have both of those. And that is where I think that there's a disconnect, where some people feel safety and support, others don't feel that. And that's kind of where I think we need to start. And you know, I'm committed to doing that work. I was very honest with the young people that it's something that we will have to think about how we're going to approach over the long term, because we have a pretty big rock in front of us right now with the pandemic and making sure we can have school. And it's something that is important for our community. It is the death of George Floyd on national television, and the heartache and the things that brought up for many of us, and unfortunately was less familiar to many of us. And so I think that we have work to do in that regard, and that the feelings that folks have about the police are something that while there are many people who don't, we have work to do.
Sure. Do you have is there any fear of an increase in racial tension in the schools, specifically between students who they may not follow the news every day, but they certainly come from families that may just from osmosis you're going to pick things up. Do you have any fear of that type of activity increasing in the school?
Well, I feel that, you know, in the Omaha Public Schools, we're doing some things to make sure that we are addressing these things in a timely fashion. Our Mr. Thomas, who is our Director of Diversity and Inclusion and Equity, is having groups, meeting with groups of students. And one of the reasons that we're kind of using a prototype model so that those can be replicated in schools with school guidance counselors or others in schools leading the conversations. And students have reached out. I mean, you know, the students reach out to me all the time. Students have reached out to me to speak with me about I think they want to know my personal feelings. And they also want to share where they are. And I know it's something that we, you know, have a plan to address as we return to school, and not just with students, but with staff as well. I heard from as many staff as well about how they were feeling, how they are processing their world in a very charged time period. And I think that that's something that we can anticipate, and we have some really good, school-based leaders, and not necessarily people in traditional leadership roles or what we would call traditional leadership roles, but people who are demonstrating leadership and taking the initiative to lead conversations in their schools. And I think that is a good thing.
Has there been time yet with all the chaos, and you got a million things happening, but has there been time yet to assess how the current COVID crisis will impact the benchmarks and the metrics of the strategic plan of action? And what, because that is a dynamic plan, as we had talked about, just to remind listeners, it's a dynamic plan that is, there's a reassessment of where we are and what we can do to make sure that those benchmarks are hit. Any results on that yet, or are you not there yet?
Well, I think a couple of things. I think, one, the pandemic has surfaced some things that probably needed to be a part of the strategic plan. And obviously, the pandemic really highlighting equity not just here in Omaha, but around the world in terms of a lot of different things, not just education, but health and some other things. And we actually were talking about that this morning, and we're going to give the board an update in September where some things that we need. Some things were accelerated. One-to-one technology was certainly accelerated very quickly, and the strategic plan needs to include the opportunity and the resources to make sure that we are refreshing, you know, that, I mean, a huge purchase all at one time. So there are many things that we have looked at and thought about. We are seeing the need for more parent engagement. And we have an office of parent engagement, but we likely very much need to raise the profile of that office and give it the resources that it needs to be more effective in terms of the ways that parents are experiencing our school district. And there is an intersection there with equity there. So many things have been raised, and we look forward to first having an opportunity to really kind of dive into some things that have been surfaced, and then also to start making some adjustments to a very dynamic plan that will likely have to iterate three or four times, even over the next year, based on the things that we need to react to.
Sure. All the more reinforcing, it was great to take the time that you took to make a dynamic plan versus something carved in granite, if you will. You mentioned the one-to-one technology initiative, and is there any update yet on where we are regarding the distribution of those tools, that kind of timeline?
Well, we'll tell you they've started to arrive, and they're arriving. They're a little bit ahead of schedule, so we gave out the schedule, and they're ahead of schedule, but you know, the road to heaven is paved with good intention. So be careful with sharing how quickly they're going to get here. But we do feel that we're very well positioned to, first of all, make sure our teachers have them first. I got an email from a teacher today, wanted to find out when they were getting theirs. And it'll be soon. And I forwarded it to the person who can really give her the answer, because I don't know the exact
sure.
answer. But and to make sure they get in the hands of our children as fast as and as quickly as possible. And I just have to thank Brian Dunn and his team, Connie Wickham. I'm going to thank her on the air too, because they have really done a nice job at doing some of the work and laying a really solid foundation for not just receiving the iPads, but also making sure that there's training for our teachers, there's training for our parents, and obviously training for our students. I will say, Mike, and I hope this part gets on the air, is that I was able to be in a kindergarten classroom, this with the summer school, and remember the kindergartners received them not in person, they received them remotely, and I watched those kindergartners learn how to put themselves on camera, take themselves off of camera, mute their microphones. I watch the teacher share the screen and then read, you know, together and recite together the some of the information about things that they need to do to remember about their, because it's on a Monday, to remember, because, you know, kindergartners and all of us forget what we learned from Friday to Monday. But so, you know, there's our teachers are amazing. They just really, the teacher, she's a teacher from Liberty Elementary School, which is one of my favorite. All of them are my favorites, but today it's my favorite. But I'm always amazed at what young people can do. They can do whatever we think they can do and whatever they think they can do.
So. And then maybe just a little bit more to surprise us too,
yes,
right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I just want to, FYI, and please correct me on this, uh-huh. but FYI, and again, for those listening, it's not as though these iPads just come in a box and then you can hand out the box. They have to be configured. They have to be, security has to be put on them, mm-hmm. all these things. And that has to be done individually one by one. And we have 52,000 of them showing up. So there's a lot
56,000.
56,000. There's a lot of work to be done with each and every one of these.
Correct.
So you can't just hand them out the day they show up. There's a lot of things that are going to be different this year, obviously. One of the things I want to start with, just real quickly, you know, for those that are new to the area or moving to the area, there's actually there's enrollment options available, including online and drive-through. If you just want to take a couple of seconds to mention that.
We have enrollment for a pandemic. We have drive-through enrollment. You can come here, and typically we're outside. It was raining today, so this is the third time I've come here and it's been raining. So that's a that's an omen. It's a positive omen because we need the rain. And the So we have that option. And we also have had, since May 1st, we've had online enrollment. So I know we had, the last time I checked, which is at least a month ago, there had been already 1,200 enrollments on online. And so we have that opportunity for families to come and to make it as convenient as possible. We obviously have in-person and we have translation available and bilingual support, depending on the language that's needed, so that families can enroll.
Outstanding. One of the things I want to point out for those that that may be new to the area, that immunization records are part of what's required as well, proof of residency and that type of thing. And with that, with immunization, do children have to be immunized to attend OPS?
They do. They do have to be. We have the lowest percentage of opt-out immunizations in the entire Omaha metro. And we also, because we've had a pandemic, we've been in a pandemic and schools have been closed since March, we actually opened our in-school-based health centers earlier because we realized that children may have missed immunizations that are required since March. And we also, working with the Omaha Medical Society and Carol Wang, I want to give her a shout out as well, to get the message out to our primary care physicians and our pediatricians that reminders to make sure, not for them, but to help with them helping our families to make sure that they get those required immunizations and that they may have missed during, you know, routine well child visits that would have occurred had we not been out of school in the case of school-based health centers or, you know, in a pandemic.
Sure.
In the case of primary care physicians.
Sure. That popped into my head. Do you think that if instead of COVID-19, this was a measles outbreak or a mumps outbreak, that we would have the pushback on wearing masks that we're getting now? I mean, we get immunized for those things because we have, you know, we have vaccines that can fix that. However...
Oh, heavens, Mike. I'm not wading into that pond.
All right, that's fair.
I just want folks to wear their facial covering so we can have school in 4 weeks from yesterday.
Sure. That's fair enough. What is the process? I was just thinking last night as I was putting this together that, you know, sometimes, and I had it happen to me, where the dog ate my homework.
Mm-hmm.
If the dog chews on the mask... And the child comes to school without a mask, there are disposables here for everybody.
And we will have disposables, and we also will have additional cloth facial coverings for our young people, because we know people are going to lose them, right? Because that's what young people and old people do. We lose things. So there will be, we ordered a percentage overage that we kind of felt, and we likely, to be honest, we probably will have to make another order, even of the cloth, facial coverings, to ensure that we have enough. As I'm starting to understand the wear and tear on them, we will likely have to replenish that for our young people. And some people are bringing their own. We've had lots of people who have pledged donations, and we look forward to receiving those. We bought a lot of face shields, to be honest. We have folks that are deaf and hard of hearing. We know they need to have face shields. I heard from a couple of teachers, and they were so tickled that we had already thought about it. And I was tickled that they were tickled. And we have a lot of personal protection equipment, PPE, that we have purchased and will continue to purchase, gowns and things that we normally don't necessarily need, but we know that our staff are going to need those things so they can be safe.
And what a fun way to express yourself, by the way, a face covering with your favorite team on it or what have you.
I have one that has a Dr. Seuss one that Mrs. Donna Dobson, who works in our, who's our director of elementary ed, her mother made for me, so... I want to make sure she gets recognition, too. I really appreciate it.
I have two more questions for you. One is, what is the process if parents are to screen their children at home, and staff members are also, it's not just the children, mm-hmm. I mean, staff members have to screen themselves as well.
Mm-hmm.
What happens if someone does show up here visibly ill?
Well, I will tell you that one of the things that we've learned from Dr. Simonson, and she is a chair of pediatrics at UNMC and at Children's Medical Center, and she's on our team. We had a call today that we meet once a week. Is that, you know, most of the symptoms in children have been very mild, and if they do have, you know, the syndrome that people have been talking about that some children
right.
come down with, how she explained it to us was that they are really, really ill. It won't be. They wouldn't necessarily need some sort of routine screening. It'd be very obvious that they'd be really ill because they get pretty, their symptoms are pretty tremendous. And so we actually were able to, one of our philanthropists, we made an ask to buy thermometers for our families, and we'll be passing those out. It's over 20,000 for thermometers that we'll be passing out to our families for them to screen at home. And then same for our staff. We'll be asking staff to screen to make sure they don't have a fever prior to coming in. And we have isolation areas. You know, this is not the first pandemic or epidemic that we've done, right? So we did H1N1 not that many years ago. I remember being in line as a high school principal getting my shot and being an example for the young people, and I actually pretended like it was like it really hurt, and it really didn't. But the kids thought it was sort of funny, I will tell you, because some of them were petrified. But so you know, we've done this before. So we, you know, create isolation areas, and you know, I don't think we've done it with something that seems to be as contagious as this, but setting up isolation areas in schools, and you know, making calls to parents if we need to. And sending staff members home, which we've actually already done. We've done that quite a bit since the school year started. We've already had 93 folks that have been out on COVID-related or requested COVID-related absence.
Parents are ultimately concerned about the education and the well-being of their students, and quite frankly, the staff across the board is as well. But how can parents best help you and the staff at OPS succeed in keeping the children safe and getting them educated?
Parents are always the most important teacher that children have, and parents and families. And letting your children know the importance of wearing the facial covering, why it's important, having them practice. I've seen lots of folks practice, and if people see me out, then they want me to see that they're practicing, and it's very cool, and I appreciate it. And the kids do look adorable. I've seen superhero. I've seen every pretty much iteration of a facial covering for a child. I think that's the most important thing, that you know, and understanding the hand washing, and not to be fearful. And it's hard to share not being fearful with something that's scary. In ways that's something that's unseen, that's scary. And I think that is going to be probably the most important thing, that we are taking the precautions, and that by taking these precautions, we can likely move sooner to something that feels a little bit more like the old normal. And that's what I would say to our parents. We're counting on them. We can't do it without them. If our parents are on board, we certainly will be able to be more successful. And we always can count on their support, and we don't think that this time will be any different.
I have one extra credit question for you. In a recent release from the district outlining the steps moving forward, I found it very interesting that professional development for teachers is a priority, even in this where they can't go to conferences in person. Can you address that?
Many things have changed in teaching in a very short time. And on March 6th, we were in school, we had spring break, and we came back virtually. And there was the technical aspects of just using technology, some of the platforms that we had and have, and then how to engage students virtually has certainly been an area of focus. We also adopted a brand new English language arts curriculum for our kindergarten through five students that we are launching in 4 weeks. And so all of that is really important, and we have continue to have sessions that are available that were recorded that people can take and partake of as we roll out the iPads. Apple has a fabulous platform for asynchronous learning that you can use for Apple, and they have, you know, 24-hour tech support. You can, you know, ask an artificially intelligent question for an artificially intelligent answer. And so, you know, these things are really important because we want our staff to be not only just prepared, but really be able to deliver it really well. So the professional development is important now more, I think, more than ever, especially with the rapid change and of technology platforms, and the percentage of its use during a school day has been multiplied many times over.
She is Dr. Cheryl Logan. She's the superintendent of public schools of the Omaha Public Schools, quite specifically. Thank you so kindly for coming in today. I really appreciate your time. It's been a pleasure to talk to you, as always.
Always a pleasure, Mike.